In this episode, we take a look at how present times match up against the future as it was imagined in the Back to the Future trilogy. Hello, welcome to the Call Like I See It podcast. I'm James Keats, and joining me today is a man whose takes are so fire, you'll be like, good gracious, Tunde Ogunlana. Tunde, are ready to, you know, make it hot in here?
Of course, man. I thought we were going to get a joke about great balls of fire, but...
you anticipated, but I like when you anticipate it.
I'm just giving you some ammunition for the future.
It could have been for sure. So, but now before we start the show, if you like the show, I'd like to ask you to please subscribe, like the show on YouTube or your podcast platform. Doing so really helps the show out. I'm recording on June 7th, 2025. And Tunde, you recently gave me a heads up that this year is the 40th anniversary of the first Back to the Future movie. That set off the trilogy. And, you know, like now the first Back to the Future was, you know, like a notable cultural marker, you know, with Marty McFly and Doc Brown traveling back in time, you know, the DeLorean and all this other stuff. But what I find even more interesting is, you know, what they cooked up in Back to the Future 2. Because in that one, the guys travel to the future, you know, in 2015, and, you know, which is a few years ago at this point. But nonetheless, they travel to the future. And, you know, what really stood out there beyond like the silly outfit decisions that they thought about 2015 was how they imagined the future with including things like VR, you know, VR headsets and stuff and holograms, you know, things that we've seen, you know, in the future, you know, our past or our present, but also things like flying cars and hoverboards, which, you know, at least aren't commercially, you know, something that we see on a regular basis. But so they took a lot of shots. And it seems like some of them hit and some of them didn't. So, you know, and the movie obviously was having fun with this, you know. But still, now that we're here and we can look at this, you know, it's worth taking a closer look at how the filmmakers imagined what the film would, what the future would look like. So, Tunde, just, you know, flat out, you know, what do you think about or what stands out to you about the, you know, the Back to the Future 2 and the take that it had on what their future, which is kind of our present or, you know, our like the past decade or so. You know, that for us, you know, their future though.
Yeah, no, this is a lot of fun, I think, especially people our age in the 40s, because we grew up actually seeing the movie as kids. And then now, like you're saying, being reminded of the 40th anniversary of the first movie, we can reflect back. And it's funny because I get nostalgic, so I'm smiling because it was, I had a nice childhood and that was a great movie, you know, that I remember fondly. But to your point, thinking about some of the technology, it's amazing because it's interesting the way you said it. You're right that the film tries to predict what the future would be from 1985 to 2015.
Yeah.
So that's what, a 30-year period?
Yep.
But here we are in 2025. So we can say, okay, let's look back a decade. How much did they get right? But the last 10 years, we know that we've lived through another exponential jump in technology. You know, let's say there was no ChatGPT in 2015, and now AI has a different presence in our life. So I think that the film, like most films, like, you know, whether it was a Space Odyssey 2001 or whether it was Minority Report, other films that tried to give people at the time in the present some sort of idea of what may be coming in the future. It got some right and some wrong, but to your point about the VR headsets, the holograms, texting, things like that, it actually got a lot of that right. Yeah. I'm still waiting for my hoverboard, but I'll hold my breath for that one. Hopefully it comes soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, the things that it got right to me, what's interesting about that is like they're taking shots in the dark, so to speak. You know, like when they go back in time, when they go back from 85 to 55, then they know exactly what they're talking about, so to speak. Like it's people that were alive in 55 that could talk about, okay, well, this is what it was like. And so they were able to create this representation. And when they go forward into the future, then it's like, what do we do? Like they have to take this blank space that nobody knows is coming and then fill it up with stuff. And there is some extrapolation in that. It's like, okay, well, this is how things are. So this, all of this stuff will probably continue to progress. And so that's how you end up with, you know, like VR, because VR is kind of like a progression of going to a movie or going and watching something on a television screen. It's like, okay, you know, a wearable headset, you know, like instead of headphones, we have wearable things on our ears in 1985, but we're actually going to be able to put some of that stuff's an extrapolation. Even like a hoverboard or a flying car is an extrapolation. So it's that kind of a thing. Like they're saying, okay, here's where we are now. These things continue to progress. This is how it's going to be. And they missed on those. But I think your point about, like, I would say, yeah, they said 2015, but it could be any time. So I'm not even distinguishing much between 2015 and 2025. But the place where it's really interesting to me as far as their take is that from a social interaction standpoint, they just couldn't foresee, obviously, you know, the way like the internet connect. They had kind of network stuff and there was mobile payment and stuff kind of like that going on in there. But the way that stuff just changes all interaction, they tried to get with a little bit with the sun and everything like that, but they still undershot it so much as far as like how different it would be, how engaging our screens are and our entertainment is now, and how that stuff can just engulf people. You know, yeah. You're out at the restaurant and you're still, you know, like hanging out with people and stuff like that. I don't know if people go to restaurants to hang out anymore. And if they do, their heads are going to be down in their phones, you know? Yeah. Like, so I think the technological change, I would say they did a better job of extrapolating and kind of filling in the blanks than they could have with the social changes that we've seen as far as people interact.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it would have been hard for many people to predict how we as humans would have really reacted to social media and the internet, and also the ability to have it in the palm of our hand on a smartphone. I think
not impossible, because what I would contrast this, and I'll throw it right back to you, but like the Minority Report thing that you mentioned, and like the reason we talk about Back to the Future is because this is fun. Like Minority Report is like terrifying, you know, like, but they imagined a lot of technological stuff there that, and then they also imagined how that would change the people. You see what I'm saying? Like, so there was both. Like, people were doing things in that movie that were supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. Like, yo, man, I don't know if I'm good with this. But it was because of the technological environment that they were in and what, like, basically how society decided to deploy that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's you know, one of the things just as I was reading and preparing, just to say it because I found it interesting, it was all over the internet. There's a big mystery from the first Back to the Future about where's the Gibson guitar. You know, that he was playing in the high school. And apparently it's a big thing if you go online. It's pretty fun. So, and actually Gibson, the guitar company, is like in on it in a fun way. Like they're really looking for it and trying to like offering rewards and prizes and things like that. So I found that fun is another way that the film kind of still resonates with all of us culturally. But here's another one I wanted to throw at you that I say this with a big smile and with a big laugh, that the film kind of got right. And they were close, because if you think about 2015, that was a presidential campaign year, right?
Are you going with President Biff, man?
Yes, I am. That was, to me, one of the great predictions that they were very correct about.
So let me see if I got this right. So you're saying if they predicted that one of the biggest bullies, like the quintessential bully from the 1980s, could rise to the top of the food chain in a democratic society and become the leader. That's the prediction. Hey man, that beats all the predictions. If they got that's a social prediction, political prediction. That's all of that.
It's funny because and the recent thing that happened with that whole joke about the Wall Street trader that called it the taco trade.
The taco thing.
TACO. So that's why the fact that when a reporter asked the president about it, he got all pissed off, and it just reminded me of Biff. It was like, you called me chicken? You know what I mean? So that's all. That's like, that's why I'm laughing. Like, wow, what a contrast. And it's near the 40th anniversary, too, of the franchise. So in any case.
No, but, I mean, the chicken out thing is hilarious, man. Like that.
Yeah. And so
President Biff would have been all about, like, you know, that he would have been visibly upset, just like our current president.
And so that's the thing why I laugh. And but also, let's, in a more serious way, I would say I don't think the film, you know, actively predicted it in that way. I think they obviously were making a film about the character Biff becoming president, who was in the first one, right?
Well, but yeah, I mean, he did it, you know, kind of through their, that, you know, through Marty's kind of mistake, you know. So yeah, I don't think they were trying to predict.
Well,
you know.
Correct, they weren't predicting it. But what I would say is the interesting I would say similarity and kind of analogy to me would be the way that they did show how technology continued to influence society as relates to the entertainment factor. Because Biff, what happened? Biff, through the cheating, right? Through getting that little booklet that Marty left about sports betting, right? He became what? He became very rich. We can assume he became the equivalent of a billionaire, right? Yeah. At the time. And so that means that he was using that technology. He would have been doing the same thing that our current president did, using the ability of fame and celebrity plus the wealth. It's like both combined to get the name out there and to
and he garner liked shiny things too and flashy, yeah, exactly. And shiny, you know. Yeah. He knew that that's how you talk to a lot of people.
Yeah, and even then think about it, and Marty's mom now, the wife had the big boobs in that show, and she had, you know, like, meaning same thing, right? The plastic surgery and the kind of hype of all that kind of that being in those in that sphere of wealth and entertainment, right? Like, that's what I mean. It's not just the wealth, it's the entertainment factor too that I think
that's they unintentionally, point. You know, like
because there's a lot of people that are very wealthy, but they're stealthy, right? They're,
yeah, they're not the George H.W. Bush kind of guy.
Correct, like wealth,
a,
correct.
A state yes. guy or even a Bill Clinton guy. Like this
or
is the
Mitt
guy
Romney, right?
Into.
Like, yeah.
Remember, he had a casino. You know, he leaned into the entertainment stuff as a part of his public persona. Like, I'm going to entertain you and I'm going to be your leader kind of
thing. Yeah, which, and that's a great point. A really Biff was point. A casino owner, yeah. And the sports, right? Like, our current president was an owner of the USFL, right? And wanted to be in it, wanted to be an NFL owner. So that to me is, I think, unintentional. I don't think they were, you know, really trying to make that.
Hey, man, maybe they read but "Amusing Ourselves to Death," and they
that's where I was going to go with it, James. No, but that's where I was going to go with it. Is you know, the book of "We're Using Ourselves to Death." Obviously, it's a logical conclusion that we're here as a society where we are in the real world in 2025. Yeah. And what I'm saying is clearly, the author of that book was not the only one in the mid '80s at the time who was thinking about how is all of this. The way that we relate to the television, celebrity, all this stuff, how can it affect the future?
Where is
and it
going?
Like
yeah.
Other people were thinking, and someone who made a film called Back to the Future 2 that was maybe more of a fun-loving film, also clearly the screenwriter and the people that wrote the script felt that the future could look like this because of what they saw in the 1980s. And remember, too, James, that the book reminded us as well, this was probably in people's minds even though... Even though you and I were kids, this would have been in people's mind because Ronald Reagan was the president and he was an actor. Yeah,
well, he's part of the proof that Neil Postman uses in that book that, hey, that video television is going to move us to a place where we want something different from our leadership. It's not going to just be leadership and smarts. It's going to be an entertainment thing. Like, that was part of the example. Because remember, by the time Postman writes that book, television and video had been kind of, you know, like, the first was it, you know, Kennedy's the first television president. Like, so it'd been 20 years by then where they consumably or presumably like observant people would have noticed a change in society over that 20 years.
That's a great point, James, because think about it. You and I are born in the late 70s. So by the time this movie comes, Reagan's a president, all that, that's all normal to us. But you're right. A 50-year-old person in 1985 was born in 1935.
Yeah.
So they would have already been grown up. They'd have been 30 years old in 1965.
And even Kennedy if they're like a Republican, for example, they would have gone from Eisenhower and even Nixon, who was a really sharp guy, you know, to Reagan. You know, I'm like, oh, man, like what's happened here, you know? And so, you know, yeah, that is that's so, yeah, that would have been apparent.
I'm
and
just
so
smiling because this movie, Reagan looks real sharp right now.
This movie that's took it to a natural conclusion, though, you know, where it was kind of like, you know, kind of like what we're talking about with amusing ourselves to death. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Biff storyline part of it is, you know, is very interesting, you know, along those lines. So
it wasn't a prediction, but things just kind of played out that way.
All of it's a prediction because they're saying this is what it's going to be in 2015. But again, in jest and having fun with it. And yeah, the reason why we'll talk about something like this as opposed to Minority Report, at least now, is because Minority Report wasn't fun. That's like, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening here? And then we see, you know, we'll talk about some of that stuff and the stuff happening that gets closer and closer to that now, you know. But now, so tell me this. What do you think someone who came from 1985, let's say Marty McFly pops up in 2025, we're not even gonna say 2015, but just 2025, like, what do you think about our society that they would find or he would find most familiar and what would he find most shocking?
Let me have fun with this one. First thing I said, damn, you guys had a black president? That'll be the first. Of course, I had to say that. But
hey, man, the diner was owned by a black guy, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. I didn't say he'd be upset about it. I think Marty would think that was cool. You know, Marty McFly looked like a cool dude. He was an honorary brother.
He didn't have a problem with that.
So. Like I said, he's an honorary brother. We like Michael J. Fox. So, you know, he'd have been okay with it. But now, I think on a serious note, probably someone going from the 40 years from 85 to 2025 probably would be surprised with some of the technological advances, I think. I think even things like the drones, and the fact that from a consumer standpoint, we can all just buy these things. They have HD resolution. I think the idea, I'm thinking back to, you know, prior to the internet, man, when I was young. I mean, I think the connectivity of the world, I think the flattening of the world, meaning that we really do, you know, you can FaceTime someone in India or China right now, anytime. And so I think all that would be a surprise. I think, though, other things culturally, I think that the rise of certain things like the amount of guns in our society, the amount of the school shootings, the mass shootings, things like that, even though, and that's why it's a weird contrast, right? Like violent crime is down a lot compared to 1985.
Yeah.
And I remember I grew up in DC. We led the nation in murders per capita 2 years in a row in the late 80s. And we used to joke that there were parts of the town where black people wouldn't go, right? Like, meaning that these places were like war zones in a lot of big cities, Detroit, Brooklyn, the Bronx, down here in Miami, you know, cocaine cowboys, all the stories you hear about that. So the country, I think, is different. It from that standpoint, things are a lot better than they were in the 80s. But like the mass shootings at grocery stores and schools are a lot worse. So it's like, it's an interesting just contrast with some of this stuff. And then even things like, I wonder how someone would just react to something like the repealing of Roe versus Wade 3 years ago, right? Like just, I wonder if they'd be, you know, surprised that that happened or not. So, you know, because I was too young to know what the culture war discussions were at the time in 1985. So that's where I'll hand it back to you to see what you think. But that's, I think someone will be a little bit surprised.
I think that a lot of the technology stuff, if it's a young person, like I think where it would be different if it's an older person, but I think a young person, remember, this is a person that just traveled in time. So I'm pretty sure they could adjust to our technological kind of like the HDs and the, you know, like even the internet. It might take, I wouldn't just call Domino's. I got to do an app on my phone or something like that. And a lot of that stuff is user friendly. You know, it's easier to do a lot of these things now. If you're a person, I say younger because just kind of older people have become intimidated by a difference more quickly than younger people do, but I think another thing, one thing they would find very familiar, like I said, obviously the technological environment would be different, but I don't think that would be as shocking to them because it swims in the same streams. Things are better, easier, maybe things that were audible are now visual and all that kind of stuff. But I think the transportation would be very familiar, I'm going to drive here. Oh, okay. No, that's far. I'm going to fly there. Things like that, They probably would think the air travel sucked because the air travel used to be more comfortable than it is now. The seats keep getting smaller and closer together and all that stuff. Cars are, it's not much different, So I think that would be probably the most familiar. Like this guy's living in, California. He's still he's sitting in traffic back then, sitting in traffic now, Where I think the most shocking would be, and this is kind of part of the technology, but it's just kind of also what we have, kind of acclimated ourselves to, is the information overload. Like you talked about, you mentioned, like, for example, school shootings and all that stuff. Like the fact that so many things that we're presented with, whether it be through our technology or whether it even be through news, cable news or whatever, like it overloads you with information to such a degree now. Like there was a lot going on in the world back then, but people didn't try or even think that they were keeping up with all of it. It was just like, all right, I'll check in with stuff when I need to. But because it wasn't easy to overload someone with information, like you get a newspaper, you go through that at your own pace. It's not, the newspaper's not sitting there trying to stimulate you in ways so you won't leave it alone, or at least it's limited in its ability to do that. Some of this is kind of amusing ourselves to death kind of thought process, but I think the information overload would be shocking. Like I think it would potentially be very difficult for someone to deal with. You have, like, I think now people who have gradually gone through this process have a really difficult time with the information overload and like the whole thing of, I don't want to miss anything. Like, I got to keep the news on so I don't miss anything, or I got to keep opening up Twitter so I don't miss anything. And it's like, yo, man, nothing is really important that it's happening like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff happens. Stuff happens all the time. But if you don't know everything that happens, it's not going to, like, if a meteor strikes, then yeah, I don't want to miss that. A nuclear bomb goes off. I don't want to miss that. But most of the stuff that we're hit, that we're getting hit with, is not stuff that rises to that level. Like, your life doesn't change one way or the other. So that, and then I think the wealth disparity would throw them off. Like, finding out there's people that, yeah, I've like, you know, $300 billion, you know, it's like, or, you know, that's the kind of wealth we're talking about. I was like, well, hold up, you know, what did that person do? Like, did that person cure cancer? You know, it's like, what, that person must have done, you know, the most amazing thing in the world. They brought back, you know, 20 million tons of gold from Saturn. You know, but it's like, nah, that's just the way we roll now, is that, you know, people can accumulate a lot of wealth, you know, and you know, society has the things that were done in the 1930s and 1940s to try to make sure that that wealth can be distributed, it can continue to flow through the society so that all boats could rise. Those things were taken away in the 80s, you know. So now we got, you know, like, wealth that is just out of this world for some people, and kind of like, quite literally. And then for everybody else, it's kind of like everybody's kind of in the same spot that they were in 1985.
We can transfer all that frustration to yelling at each other on social media. So
yes, yeah, perfect. Yeah.
That's why the technology did a good job.
Working people can be made mad at other working people.
Yeah,
and exactly. And don't even look at the billionaires. They don't know where the money went.
No, it's even better than that. Think about it. Immigrants get made to be mad at other immigrants, and then, immigrants, you know, want them to be deported. It's interesting. Yeah.
The poor immigrants. That's where all the money is.
us American citizens are just watching them saying, what the hell are you guys doing? but then that's, you know, it's interesting as you say that, because I do think that, you know, going back to your actual point about the information overload, and I think that's what we're dealing with right now. I think you're right.
I think people that have dealt with that gradually still can't really do it.
That's what I was going to say. We got a lot of brains breaking online and mental health concerns, and I don't say that as a joke. I mean, I went on X for a couple of days in December over the holidays.
And you're still recovering.
Yeah, I'm recovering. I was like, man, I've seen this for 3-4 days. I'm out. Like, I can't. Is a cesspool of BS. And so, and I don't think it's all social media's fault. I think the algorithms, there's a lot of other things that go into the ingredients of this mess that we're in. But I think you're right. This information overload probably, I would say, is the biggest difference since 1985.
Well, I think that's the thing that somebody would be most shocked about. Like, you give them a couple of days in walking around on the streets and, you know, like, oh, I got to get a phone. Okay, yeah, no big deal. I've used a phone before. Maybe it wasn't mobile. Maybe it was in my car, you know, or whatever. Has a screen. Okay, cool. Well, I got to start taking pictures of myself and then putting these online. And then I got to read what people say. And people are, like, talking stuff about me. And it's like, I don't even know these people. And it's like,
yeah, exactly. You're right.
I keep getting these notifications. Oh, there's been a shooting here. Oh, you know, this guy got pulled over and he got beat up. Oh, you know, like, and again, these are all serious things, you know, but it's just like, I don't know that I think that it's something that does something to you if you're in it all the time. You know, like, there's a reason why we can only see so far and only hear so far. Like, I can't see directly or hear what's happening in Atlanta, Georgia right now. I'm in South Florida. Like, and so, you know, again, unless it's a nuclear bomb going off of Atlanta, then I can, that's less stuff that I actively need to worry about. I got stuff to worry about here right now, you know, myself, you know, and my family and all that kind of stuff that I need to be worrying about, all this other stuff that's tangentially connected to me, or stuff that's overseas. And I'm sitting here stressing about that stuff, stressing about my life, stressing about this person's life, that person's life. And I don't even know those people. Like, I just think that would be the thing that would like eat away at somebody if they weren't used to it, because it eats away at people that are used to it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The people, all of us that are used to it, are getting eaten away. So that's interesting, man. I you know, we went from a nice, happy start of nostalgia and me enjoying my childhood.
This is supposed to be fun.
Now I'm fucking depressed.
What have we done?
I want to go cry, and I'm going to go, you know. So, you know, I think I'm done. Man. So.
Yeah. So I think we'll quit while we're ahead, or at least while we're not as far behind as we didn't want to be. But no, it, definitely, we appreciate everybody for joining us on this episode of Call Like I See It. Subscribe to the podcast, rate it, review it, tell us what you think, send it to a friend. Until next time, I'm James Keys.
I'm Tunde Avalon.
All right, we'll have a call out dropping this week as well, so check that out as well. We'll talk soon.